everybody. Before I launch into what I think this passage might mean or what scholars might think about it, I'll introduce myself. I'm Grace Vandervliet. I work at the art museum down the street, and my job is to look at art and talk about it with people, and it's a ton of fun. But it also has this weight of expectation that in like 15 minutes, you'll come in, look at something you've never seen, figure it out together, and then leave like a totally changed person. And I feel like it struck me that that's what a sermon is too, that like we come in here, we sit together, we look at this text collectively, we're illuminated, and then we have new insight and motivation for the rest of the week. So kudos to all the people who stand up here and take that on. I am typically on the receiving end of a sermon, and it feels like this one-directional conversation where I'm absorbing and digesting information that has been like thoughtfully distilled and organized for me. And that's so nice. But buckle up, because I'm going to make you do a little bit of work today. So when I unpack something and make sense of it, my usual process is interactive. And it's a triangular conversation between you and me and art. And it's even more complex because you is like individual and this group dynamic. And art is the physical thing that we see and the artist's perspective. And me is like all the life that I have lived and my views. So we've got that dynamic in the room right now, and I just wanted to name it. So let's dive in. You may have noticed in your bulletin, there is an insert and it has images in it. Left mine over here. They are related to the dream of Jacob. So if you could pull that out and look at it, if you're online, we have permission to share the website and look at these images, but the studio didn't want us to hold on to those and stream them forever. So in terms of accessibility, I hope that people visiting us online are able to view these. But if you're in person, let's start with this image on the front of the insert. Okay. Start in one spot. And just move your eyes around it. Maybe you move it in a circle. Maybe you move in like an X diagonal shape. Where does your eye land? You can like point to a place. Circle it, grab a pen, pencil, mark it up. What's intriguing, and now that you have that spot, zoom in and get closer. You might need to like, you know, halt and just, depending on your eyes, look a little more closely. Keep looking, and I'll just narrate in the background here. So artists are humans, and they interpret texts and nature through their own eyes and experiences, and then they make choices about like which medium to use, clay, paint, ink, scale, tiny or huge. And in real life, the print is bigger than this. And color, repetition. And their goal is to like share a message and also invoke a response. Like writers, artists also edit, and they remove, and they move things around. So I'm going to read a little bit of the passage again as we're looking together. And let's look closely, but hold off on evaluating or analyzing anything yet. Jacob left Beersheba and set out for Haran. When he reached a certain place, he stopped for the night because the sun had set. Taking one of the stones there, he put it under his head and lay down to sleep. He had a dream in which he saw a stairway resting on the earth with its top reaching to heaven, and the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. There above it stood the Lord. Okay. Let's open it up. Two more images. We're going to look at three total. This will take about 15 minutes. I know sometimes when I'm in like a new workout class, I'm like, how long am I going to have to do this? So I want to let you know it's not going to be forever. It's going to be short. We're going to do it together. So let's look at Ascent, another print by this same artist, John August Swanson, created 28 years after Dream of Jacob, also inspired by this passage. So as we're looking at this colorful cacophony, let's imagine that we are jumping into it, into this scene. And I'm going to guide us through each of our five senses. What would you hear? Imagine a smell. What taste does this remind you of? I'm thinking candy, cotton candy, gumdrops. I don't know where you're going. How might it feel to be on that ground, sleeping, trying to sleep, in that hunched position? Like, imagine your body, crooking your neck on a rock, or holding onto that ladder rung. And in that swirling scene, where would you look? What would pull your eye? Okay, so keep looking. And sometimes after we spend time with a person, a book, or an artwork, we are intrigued and some questions bubble up. And when we're looking at art together in a gallery, our team of educators typically follows this bell curve rhythm. We warm up by looking. When we're opened up, we kind of have some more intense discussion. And then we layer in some context and background because we're ready for it. And then we put the pieces together and articulate a connection, a meaning, and head back into the world. How might this artwork, this passage, be relevant to us personally in our current moment today? So I'm going to layer in just a few bits about background that you might not know just by looking. So who made these? John August Swanson is an artist, and his statement says, "My work is my most social act. My art is the way I can talk to you." He doesn't make art only for art's sake and not only as self-expression. He attempts to make accessible and reaffirm certain values, and these are the values he lists: caring for each other, acting as peacemakers, or listening to someone who needs to be heard. He loved the circus and as entertainment and opera because his Mexican mother would play that and listen to the radio while hanging the laundry and doing chores. He was deeply Catholic, and he studied with Sister Carita Kent in Los Angeles. And he said, "When people see my work and relate it to their own struggle and growth, then I'm very happy." So he passed away in 2021. John August Swanson was one of the first professional artists I ever met. He visited my elementary school, and my art teacher organized a fundraiser to buy the Dream of Jacob for our school entryway. And it was hung at my eye level. And truly, like, my mom also worked in the office of the school, so I was stuck there a lot, and I'd have to sit, and just, I couldn't get enough of the detail in real life. So I think that might be a personal reason why when I read this passage, that was the first image that came to my mind. So how did he make them? Printmaking is like sorcery. It is really complex. Artists use science and ink and this backwards technology. Basically, the premise is you transfer something you draw or carve on a plate, and you press it onto another piece of paper. And then you can do that as many times as you want. Like, if you have a rubber stamp, that's kind of the most basic thing. But this case, it's called serigraph, and that is silk screens. So John August Swanson paints one color. So if you're looking at this Dream of Jacob, all the blue would be on one screen. And then all the yellow would be on another screen, and all the green on another screen. And you have to press the paper onto each screen, and you have to line up the colored screens perfectly, or it's not registered and it looks shaky. So if you want to YouTube a process, that's what I recommend. There are some good ones that are like 1 or 2 minutes. What you leave with is this sense of awe. And kind of like, why would you ever do that? That takes so long. But the result is a color saturation and beauty. Like, it just draws you in. So it's this, and you can make a series of prints, and usually he prints about 25 of each of these images. So that's the process. And what does he say? When possible, it's really great to lift up the words of artists in relation to what they make. So in a letter to a friend, Swanson says about these two prints we've seen, "The themes are similar, with multiple ladders and stairs leading at the wandering person's dream to see visions of universes and expanding beauty. It's exciting that we have this great capacity to keep growing and developing in the short time we're on Earth." Okay, so we've looked briefly. We've layered in a little bit of information. And now let's connect the dots and compile what we've, our visual inventory here. Our final image is the jester. Naturally, let's compare it to ascent, which is to the left. You guessed it, yes, same artist. Look for similarities. A ladder. You got a ladder. An opening. Multiple figures. There's technique. That technique is called stippling, when there's a bunch of little dots, like pointillism. It can feel like your atmosphere is hazy or dreamlike when you break up the air like that. You might have experienced that the past few days in the hazy atmospheric air that feels a little eerie. And now look for differences. There's a jester instead of Jacob. The main figure is kind of enclosed in walls instead of opening. But really, like, why a clown? Swanson said, "I wanted to give the feelings of dreams and imagination a visual form apart from the traditional representation of Jacob. Many traditions include the role of jester or fool, reflecting on that God has chosen what the world holds as foolish so as to confound the wise. God loves a paradox and flipping expectations." And fools also move between worlds. Like, historically, they would have lived in the court, and they would have also been at a bar or a party, and they could move, and they could speak wisdom to power in humor, and it could be heard. And sometimes they say things that are so real and painful about death or relationships that all you can do is laugh. So here this jester peers out of a window at the night sky, and his friends, two women and infants and other jesters, sleep below. So he's grounded in reality, but he's seeking this transcendence, and he goes between. Swanson said, "Jesters want to teach us by their humor. They keep opening their own windows to understand." So what are we meant to understand through this passage and through these images? After spending some time with the passage and sifting scholars' commentary, I'm just going to share 3 brief interpretations that surfaced. The first is a Jewish mystical reading, that Jacob, afraid and alone, finds himself in this in-between liminal space between the home he's escaping from and the destination he hasn't reached, between the known danger of his brother Esau and the unknown Laban, and between his youth and the wrestling match with a stranger, which Rolf preached on. And in this Jewish tradition, the ladder can symbolize that up and down shape of prayer, the ascend, the encounter with God, and then the descend. And in this encounter, God reaffirmed that covenant promise to Abraham and Isaac. It's like a warm-up, a really intense workout, a cool-down, or like you're entering a new space, you're figuring out what's happening there, you have like a doctor's appointment, and then you process the information. This is a really typical like experiential curve. And how was Jacob changed after that descent? I mean, I imagine he was wiped out, and amazed, and his eyes were open to what was around him. His awareness was unlocked. And that's what art, like visual art or dance or music or writing, does. So after an encounter, we might say, whoa, I didn't realize this was the actual reality around me. I now see it with new eyes. So the second interpretation of this passage projects like moral view. So we're going to do a quick timeout. I'm going to ask you to imagine or physically draw progress in one line. How do you imagine progress looking? If you did draw it and share it with somebody else, does anybody have a line that starts in the bottom left-hand corner and an arrow that goes up to the upper right-hand corner? Did anyone imagine that? Thank you, Sandy. 85% of University of Michigan students, when I ask them to draw progress, that is what they draw. It's linear, it's diagonal, it is moving towards up, towards the future. But that's not what's happening here. That could be the interpretation with the ladder. Some scholars interpret it as like a vertical axis of moral development representing humanity's desire to strive towards higher ideals or achievement, even in the midst of hardship. And other artists like Langston Hughes have written poem Mother and Son about life for me ain't no crystal stair, or Gatsby writing this list of self-improvement tasks, or even the theological idea of like sanctification, which is a very Dutch Reformed thing to do, to become more Christ-like, ongoing process of improvement. But in Jacob's case, this is not one directional. It's like angels are ascending and descending. I'm imagining that happening all at the same time. So finally, there's another idea, and that it's relates to God's faithfulness and reaffirmation of his covenant to bless Abraham and Isaac, but that Jacob's dream foreshadows Jesus as the link between heaven and earth. John 1:51 states, "You'll see heaven open and the angels of God ascending and descending on the Son of Man." Is there one right answer? We all want one, but like in the museum, we often leave with more questions than when we began. We observe, we listen to perspectives, we put these pieces together, draw some conclusions, and allow a lot of ambiguity. So while I like a tidy conclusion, I'm okay living in this limbo, moving back and forth on the ladder, ascending and descending. So my hope is that over the past few minutes, these images have helped us enter a new realm, encounter the passage in a new light, and maybe we've emerged changed and more aware of God's faithfulness and presence. In a gallery conversation, we try to return to the source, return to the artwork in front of us, and return to the text. So I'll end with that. When Jacob awoke from his sleep, he thought, "Surely the Lord is in this place, and I was not aware of it." He was afraid and said, "How awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God. This is the gate of heaven."